Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
All right, so Will Fuller, Bradley Roby, did you have something you wanted to get to? See, Seth, you have your finger up in the air. So you're about to say something profound.
Yeah, I know. I felt guilty for doing that. I realized I was doing that. It was like, you know, I wanted to carry over our discussion about the McRib you were having during the break. But then I realized, oh, you had teased this fender poll.
Well, so, you know, here's the thing, Seth.
My quick question was, is the McRib out again now? Is it out right this moment?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Like,
I know you're fancy and in shape now, so you don't know. Oh, I've never even heard of McRib.
Had you asked me in June of this year, I would have had three of them in front of me right now.
The McRib returns on Wednesday, I guess, today.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. Seth putting it in the Google machine. Well, Seth, it's funny. you bringing up the McRib coming into the segment, and the Pender poll that I put up yesterday for Texan fans tells me that actually 39% of the people listening right now would probably rather you and I talk about the McRib than talk about what it is we're about to talk about. And the reason I say that is because the poll I put up yesterday was, how do the Fuller and Roby suspensions make you feel as a fan of this team? And before I get to the results, Seth, I'm going to give you the four choices, and you tell me how you felt when you heard about these suspensions. Here are the choices. Angry, embarrassed, apathetic, or oddly intrigued to see what Deshaun Watson does with more skill guy attrition.
I guess I would have most fit into oddly intrigued.
Okay.
My initial thought, honestly, was I felt bad for Will Fuller, even though Will Fuller made the mistake and he took responsibility for it and it's his fault. I've been in that position before where you're getting injured all the time and you feel desperate. And I knew that, you know, Will Fuller, he succumbed to desperation. He wanted to stay healthy. He had to do something. And I always have more sympathy for those guys than guys that are simply, you know, just trying to get swole and beat punks down by cheating.
Yeah.
So that's how I felt. Even though he made the mistake, I felt bad for him. So, but I guess oddly intrigued would be the big one, because I do want to see what this offense looks like without Will Fuller. I want to see what Deshaun Watson, how he responds to it, how Tim Kelly responds to it. Yeah, so I'm intrigued.
Yeah, the choices, again, how did you feel after the Roby and Fuller suspensions were announced? How did it make you feel as a fan of the team? Angry, embarrassed, apathetic, or oddly intrigued? Oddly intrigued finished second by a little tiny bit over embarrassed. Angry, oddly enough, was the one that finished in last place. The one that finished in first, and I think this would be concerning if I were the Texans, is apathetic. Got 39% of the vote. That, you know, this news did not move 39% of the people responding to this poll one way or the other. They didn't care.
There are a couple elements here. One is just that in football, people generally don't have nearly the same level of ill will towards steroid users or PED users in football as they do in baseball.
Yep.
It's amazing. It's like night and day, the responses to it. And I think part of it is people assume, I think a lot of people assume that more players are using them than they actually do. Or people think that, well, look, it's football, it's brutal, these guys got to do whatever they got to do to get through it. For whatever reason, they're not as concerned about that. So I think that's at least a little part of the apathy. And then I think another part of it is that we were never really able to form an emotional attachment to Will Fuller, right? And I'm speaking about him in the past tense almost, because I don't know what's going to happen after this season. But you always had this feeling with Will Fuller where you wanted to keep him in at arm's distance, because as electric as he was when he was healthy, you didn't know when he was going to be healthy or if you could rely on him. So in a season where the Texans have a 1% chance of making the playoffs. When you lose them, it just feels a little bit like, well, I mean, this is what you get with Will Fuller, right?
Yeah.
For whatever reason, he's not available again. I've been through this drill before.
Yeah.
I've lost Will Fuller before. I'm not going to have a huge response to it.
His hamstring was your drunk parent. You know what I mean? Who gets straight for a couple of months. His hamstring was like Shooter in Hoosiers.
Yeah.
Dennis Hopper's character in Hoosiers, who, you know, Gene Hackman puts him on the staff and he's really contributing. He's doing great things. He's doing the coaching equivalent of attacking downfield in football. He's drawing up the picket fence to win a game at the end of the game. You're going, sober Shooter is awesome. We love having him here. He is great to have on the staff. He is helping us win games here at Hickory. And then out of nowhere, he just stumbles in drunk one day, tie all bedraggled, screaming at the refs in the middle of the floor. And you're like, there goes the hamstring again. There it goes.
And then it felt, and this year it felt like, wow, he's finally got his hamstring clean and sober.
Yeah.
He's gotten his act together. I think it's going to stick this time.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you find out, like, oh, and by the way, he's got like four kids from a side piece that you didn't know about.
Right.
Like, so his hamstring is his turn now into this PED issue or something.
He's graduated from alcohol to crack.
You know, hamstring is
shooting heroin.
His hamstring's a no good, low down. Can't trust them type of hamstring.
No doubt. All right, 713-572-4610. Yeah, if you want to, you can still vote. As they say, get on out there and vote. You can still vote in my Pender poll that I've got up at Sean T. Pendergast on Twitter.
Well, yeah, I know. Yeah, as I hear you grovel for votes on this thing, I will say the voter turnout for this poll was oddly, or I guess, perfectly in line with the actual answers. So most people said apathetic, or the largest number of people said apathetic. You only had 561 votes on this poll. That's kind of pathetic, Sean.
Are you saying that as a commentary about me or a commentary about the Texans? I normally
commentary about the Texans. And
this just in as I go flopping it onto the table. I normally get like 1,500 votes.
I know that's
poll.
My point.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
But people were apathetic about this one. It's below standards.
Well, it was 559 when this segment started, so I picked up two.
Now I'm going to start worrying about our actual ratings.
Like, yay me.
I know. Nobody pays us based on your polls.
I know.
But they're the ratings.
Here's a good topic. How apathetic are people about this topic?
Coming up next, something you guys definitely don't care about.
Clearly.
I mean, we've got evidence that you don't care about it.
This is
meta. Sometimes I'm preparing to bed Brandy. She'll be like, what are you going to do to me? I'm like, that thing you told me you never liked doing.
All the things
you ready?
Hate.
I'm the bad boy.
Right. Let's
the wrong kind of bad boy.
Hey, you know what, Seth?
You want me to be a bad boy? Like, you mean like biker guy bad or like frat guy that you hope that your child doesn't end up in a room with at night? Oh, okay. Oh, you want the biker bad. Okay.
Because I'm both those guys.
Yeah.
All right. You know who cares about this show? Mac in Cyprus. He's on the phone. 713-572-4610. Mac, you're on Payne and Pendergast. What's up?
Hey, good morning, guys. Can you hear me clearly?
You sound good.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Hey, yeah, I guess I want to be your 560 whatever. I guess I'm...
Oh, Mac.
Oh, now I can't hear him at
all. Someone killed him.
There we go.
Mac, you cut out for a second. Go ahead. Start over.
Okay, I'm sorry. I say I want to be your 563rd bowler.
Yes.
I feel apathetic about this team. I've been feeling apathetic about the team for a very long time. And I would tell you why. Whenever a team, from what we have heard, allow a hostile takeover, like what happened with Bill O'Brien in the organization, you know that organization, you don't have to be a part of it, you know that organization is not ran right. So we talk about Bill O'Brien, and we feel like he was a disaster. I'm not confident going forward that the owner, the son, McNair, is the proper person to make the right decision for this team. How would you give a person like Bill O'Brien that kind of control? So saying that, he is just as responsible, in my opinion, for the disaster that this team is going to be for the next 3-4 years. We have turned a franchise quarterback, that's what we have in Sean Watson, for the next 4 years, you will never see the full growth of this quarterback on this team. And, you know, we started talking about a team. And I know the Houston Texans is our team. But we started looking at the Texans like people look at Detroit. People not want to come here because they see the disaster from afar. And I know there's only so many teams in the league and money talks. But if you got a free agent out there and they have a choice between the Texans and someone else, do you really believe with the disaster of what we see from the outside looking in that teams want to come? So
let me ask you though, because there's various other teams in the NFL. You know, like the 49ers not too long ago were kind of considered a disaster. So I guess what would be the biggest obstacle for a candidate looking at the Texans? What do you think? And I know you just laid it out that you think Cal McNair might not be the guy. But a lot of the disaster that was created, I think, has happened in the last 2 years since Bob McNair passed away. I mean, Bob McNair passed away just about two calendar years ago.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the things that inherited doesn't feel like the appropriate word to use, but I'll say a lot of the problems or a lot of the situations that Cal McNair inherited were things that were 2 years ago. Bob McNair was the head coach. You hire Brian Gain shortly thereafter, and you're trying to figure out when was Brian Gain hired?
He was hired in January of 2018.
2018, right. Yeah. So he had been hired previously. And I think what Cal McNair has been doing for the last couple of years, and I'll agree with you, man, like, giving Bill O'Brien all that control was a huge, huge issue. The thing where, as I've been, you know, cautiously trying to figure out how Cal's going to run this team, the thing that has impressed me is that Cal will pull the plug on an experiment very, very fast. You know, they gave Bill O'Brien all that control and all that power. But then they fired him when he had multiple years left on his contract. They fired Brian Gain when he had multiple years left on his contract. And in a lot of ways, it's only been 2 years that Cal's been really running the show. And I think he kind of let some experiments play their way out. But when it was time and when it's run its course, he pulled the plug on it. And one of the big criticisms about the Texans for a long time has been, well, they don't want to spend money. They're afraid to spend money. I would say Cal has been the exact opposite of that money. Like Cal has taken some sunk costs. Like, he's eaten some money that a lot of other owners or general managers or whatever you want to call them would try to justify over and over again and would keep playing it out. So that's where, yes, the last 2 years have been a sloppy mess. I don't think that people are looking at the Texans right now. And this is honest. Like, I think you guys that listen to me long enough know that I don't pull a whole lot of punches when it comes to the Texans organization. I think that the biggest concern people have right now, looking from the outside in, is what is Jack Easterby's role with the team? And that's something that any GM candidate and any coaching candidate is going to really, really want to know and get a feel for. And I think the Texans understand that. So I completely and totally get all of your reservations about the way the Texans have operated the last couple of years. Yeah, I think they've made some big mistakes. But I also think that they're willing to hit the reset button, and not a lot of organizations are as willing to hit the reset button.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. When did the Texans find out about the Fuller suspension, and what could Will Fuller have been thinking 3 weeks ago when he said this? We will re-examine. We'll go back in time next. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610, with you on a Wednesday. Good to be with you. Here was Will Fuller about 3 weeks ago. It was during the bye week. He did a media session. So about a week or so after the trade deadline, Will Fuller, as we know, might have been the biggest name that was getting floated at the trade deadline. Certainly the one that drew the most headlines when he wasn't moved to the Green Bay Packers. It'd be interesting now if Will Fuller had been traded to the Green Bay Packers. The Packers would be like, we kept our receipt. We need to return this. This is a lemon wide receiver that we can't use for the rest of the year. Here was Will Fuller talking about being floated around at the trade deadline.
To be honest, it really sucked, just being shouted around like that. Giving this organization my all, coming to work every day, very unselfish player, do everything they ask. And then, just to be shopped around, I did feel a certain type of way, but like I said, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to play with Deshaun and continue to try to get wins with this organization.
It's an interesting.
Is that something you and?
Oh, sorry. Was there more? Sorry about that, Ben. It sounded like he was wrapping up there. Was there more to that?
I'm going to miss.
Is that something you and your agents will continue to have in mind moving forward? You're obviously headed to free agency.
I'm just focused on staying healthy and helping my team win.
Sorry about that. Will. Sorry about that, Ben Gary, our producer. It's an interesting self-evaluation in light of the events of the last 2-3 days.
Yeah. Because this was a week ago? Friday. This is Friday that he did that press conference?
No. It was back in like second week of November.
It
was during the bye week. He was asked He was asked, what did it feel like to be part of trade talks? Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So at the time, I'm guessing that he hadn't had the first positive test yet from the A sample, and it doesn't seem like he filed an appeal on all of this at all. I think that, yeah, how does he feel right this moment? Is he glad that he didn't get traded? I'd be glad as hell that I didn't get traded. I would hate to have just been traded to a team that, remember, if the Packers had traded for him, it was because they were planning on using him on a Super Bowl push. So it wouldn't just be the sunk cost of spending money or spending a draft pick on a guy that wasn't now available. You spent a draft pick on a guy that's not going to be able to help you at all for a Super Bowl this year. He would be despised in Green Bay right now. He would be absolutely hated. So he's got to whatever issues he had with the Texans shopping him around and, oh no, asking too high a price for him. Like, let's remember, he was upset, apparently, that the Texans were asking too much for him. He should thank his lucky stars right this moment that he didn't get traded to some contender that would have wasted a pick on trying to win a Super Bowl this year.
Yeah. Yeah, we learned – it's a great point. We learned yesterday from Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, that the Texans found out about Will Fuller's PED suspension this past Monday, 2 days ago, from Fuller's agent is when they found out. So I think that was one of the big questions I had, Seth, because if they had known even, say, a week ago, then the Texans' behavior over the last week would have been very curious, because they released a player who presumably would now be getting the lion's share of the snaps. Kenny Stills, with Randall Cobb and Will Fuller both Cobb, we don't know when he's coming back. Fuller done for the season. Kenny Stills was all of a sudden looking at a spot here, assuming his quad was healthy, where he was going to probably be getting 75-80% of the snaps for the first time in a long time with an NFL team. For the first time since Fuller went down sporadically at times last year, at least.
Yeah, so, and this is where the timelines get a little bit tricky, and it's funny, I've asked a couple people about these things, and I think I don't think there's necessarily any standard timeline, but usually what'll happen is there's an A sample that gets tested, then the NFL will test the B sample to confirm. At that point, the player and his agent know, but the team doesn't necessarily know. It's all very confidential. But I don't know, the distance between the A sample and the B sample would be the curious thing. Because it was right after the Thanksgiving game that Will Fuller had said, that his team of medical people or team of people that Brandon Cooks had helped hook him up with were keeping him healthy this year. I don't know if he would have given that answer if he knew that he was just about to get popped for a PED suspension.
Right.
Like, if he did, it's kind of messed up bringing Brandon's name into it and everything.
I wonder if he would have tried to not do any media. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, you might have said,
and players, now look, is Will Fuller the level of a player who, when the team comes to him and says, it's your turn to do a media session? We know Deshaun and JJ do one every week because they're the two best players on the team, certainly the two most prominent faces on the team for representing their side of the football. And I think quarterbacks do them every week anyways. Is Fuller the level of a guy who can, if the media relations team came to him and said, it's your turn to do this, could say, no, I don't think I want to do this today.
Right.
You know?
He could have faked a tummy ache or something.
That's true.
That's what I would have done. Yeah. My tummy hurts.
Yeah.
I think that it's maybe for the best, though, too. Look, it would have been the height of potential incompetence, depending on what the reasons for Fuller's departure completely and totally were. Maybe there's more to it. But and I don't mean that in any kind of a nefarious way or anything, but maybe they were just really, maybe hypothetically, Stills could have been really upset for some reason off the field. Who knows? But it would have looked really bad for the Texans if they let him go while also knowing that Fuller was going to be gone too. It doesn't look like that was the situation. And I'll say it might be for the best anyway, because we've been clamoring for some of the young guys to play because we got to find out what we have in them. And I want the new GM to come in knowing as much as possible. So if it had turned into just, well, hey, there's Kenny Stills, who this next GM is already going to have a book written on Kenny Stills. He doesn't need to learn anything about Kenny Stills.
That's true.
Instead, now we'll see some extra Isaiah Coulter or Kiki QT or whomever else. And I think maybe the new GM gets a little bit of a head start on the roster building for next year.
Yeah, big picture. Look, it's weird to say because they're 4-7. Big picture, this actually works out for the Texans. And I hate it for Will Fuller. And I hate it for me because I have a ticket where I have over 7.5 wins for the Texans this year. So this ain't helping that. But as far as the long term, the Texans are actually picking up a little salary cap space they can carry into next year. This just in, they get relief on the $3 million that they owe Fuller for the rest of the year and the nearly $2 million that they owe Bradley Roby. That's $5 million in cap space that they can now go use on something next year for the team. You're right, Seth. They get a look at some other guys. I do wonder the timeline. Yeah, Fuller didn't know around the trade deadline. I think that's safe to say because that was about a month ago. But they did release Kenny Stills like Saturday of this weekend. Is it safe to assume that Will Fuller probably knew about the positive A sample before Saturday? And if so, what's going through Will Fuller's mind as the Texans are not only voluntarily depleting their receiving core, but Kenny Stills didn't get picked up on waivers. The Texans are eating his salary for the rest of the year.
Right, right. I don't know. And that's where, again, the timeline gets a little, man, it's only Wednesday, right? It feels like Thanksgiving was like 3 weeks ago, Sean.
I know.
It feels like Texans. A long, long time ago. You know, maybe Kenny Stills and his agent actually told the team before the B sample was tested.
Yeah.
And, like, again, I don't know, like, how long the distance is between the A and the B sample being tested. Would people be mad at Will Fuller if he held out on this information longer where it could have prevented Kenny Stills from having been released and then screwing the team over further that way?
Yeah, I don't know how fans feel about it, but I would say if you're the Texans and you're trying to win football games, which I think they are, you know, the Texans are operating like they can still go 9-7 this year from ownership on down. You know, Cal McNair, when they were 1-6, said, "I'm the extreme optimist here," talking about the trade deadline. So if I'm anybody from Cal McNair to Romeo Crennel to Jack Easterby or anybody in there and Will knew about it as the team is releasing Kenny Stills, I'm kind of pissed. Especially Cal, because Cal's paying Kenny Stills to do Cal is going to be paying Kenny Stills to play for another team basically now.
You know, we haven't really talked about that part of it at all, Sean. We've asked fans whether they're upset or apathetic or what have you. We've wondered whether Will Fuller still harbors any resentment to the Texans for shopping around. But the actual feeling of the team management towards Will Fuller, where Will Fuller's always been this guy that's just been not available for whatever reason. You know, he's a likable Terrence Jones.
Yeah.
There's always something with Will Fuller.
Always something with this guy.
It's just always something popping up with this guy.
Yeah.
And then this happens, and then I find out that, wait a second, hypothetically, you could have actually let us know a little bit earlier to where we wouldn't have let go of Kenny Stills quite so fast. Is that the final straw for the Texans?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we've kind of been operating from the assumption that the Texans want Will Fuller back next year, and it might just be the contract and the price that doesn't get it done. Maybe the Texans, after years and years of not being able to rely on Will Fuller, are ready to just let him walk out the door.
Could be.
Yep. I know, which I would kind of respect that. It would make me nervous because then I wouldn't really feel good about the receiving core at all. I mean, like,
I know. I forget. He's a really good player when he's out there.
There's that part of it.
That matters.
But I can't rely on him. Yeah. Like, I can't. I already know already, Sean, Will Fuller will not play a full season next year. He's going to miss at least one game due to suspension. So
this is like a
long list of seasons where he doesn't play a complete season will be extended in 2021.
Are the 49ers a beta test for making sure we get a Super Bowl this year? I'll explain. We'll do some headlines. John McClain, top of the hour. That's all next. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. Appreciate you joining us on a Wednesday. John McClain jumps in with us at the top of the hour. We talked about yesterday, Seth, Albert Breer was saying that the NFL is looking at the idea of local bubbles for the postseason. We know that COVID's become a bit of an issue for the league. To wit, we're getting a Wednesday afternoon football game today.
Wednesday afternoon football game, Sean.
Excited about.
Sean, I read, let's see, I read an ESPN article. I read an NFL.com article. I read some, like, long pieces this morning. I read at least three long pieces this morning about this Ravens game coming up.
Yeah.
None of them told me exactly who's playing in this game today. Other than RG3 is starting at quarterback. And I was getting to the point, it was really frustrating. Because, like everything else with COVID, you live in this state of just complete uncertainty where you don't know exactly what's going on. And I can't even find exactly who's playing for the Ravens today. It was annoying the hell out of me.
Seth, I picked up Gus Edwards on the waiver wire to start this week because J.K. Dobbins and Mark Ingram are on the COVID list. This game has been postponed for so long now, they're active again. J.K. Dobbins.
No, guys, like, that were on the COVID list are now, like, which I guess makes sense, right? That's what you were waiting for. But they've had a total of 17 players test positive or be on the list. And with the Ravens, the thing that's different compared to some of these other outbursts has been that guys have actually tested positive.
Right.
Like, they've had a positive test case for, I think, 12 straight days now.
Yeah.
Versus just contact tracing like it was with the Broncos.
Yeah, and it's their quarterback. You know, this mirrors kind of the Patriots with Cam Newton earlier this year. As you mentioned, RG3 is going to start this game later today against the Steelers. And you were asking me before, what's the line on this game? Because RG3 is starting. It's got to be at least a touchdown. Seth, you're getting very good at this. You should be, you know, if you've got an addictive personality at all, I feel like I should try to steer you away from how good you are at setting lines. Steelers minus 10. Minus 10.
What did I say? I thought I said minus 7.
You said they're got to be favored by at least a touchdown.
Oh, at least a touchdown.
Which tells me that you were thinking more like it's probably like 8, 9, 10. I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt here.
Well, if you look at this matchup just in isolation, okay, both teams have very good defenses. Both teams have very good quarterbacks, except Roethlisberger's been a much better passing quarterback than Lamar Jackson this year.
Yep.
It would favor the Steelers, plus you have the home field advantage, and not just a normal home field advantage, but the team you're playing didn't even know for sure if they were coming to see you 36 hours ago.
They've had to get mentally prepared to travel for this game four times now.
Every single day.
You know what I mean? Like, they didn't know until, for Sunday, they didn't know until, like, literally the day before if they would even be going to Pittsburgh. They were doing walkthroughs on Saturday. You know what I mean?
Like, it's like when you're a young man and you have like a 4-hour makeout session.
Yeah,
like,
man.
You're just like, I don't, is it going to happen? I'm not sure. As opposed to normally when you get older, where you're like 10 minutes into it, you're like, okay, this isn't happening, right? Okay, let's reconvene at another time.
These two teams have football blue bees going on right now, man.
So Ben Roethlisberger, who, by the way, shares the same touchdown to interception ratio as Deshaun Watson this year. Both of them, 24 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Roethlisberger is doing it in almost the exact opposite fashion as Deshaun Watson. He's peppering the field with short throws, like damn near at the line of scrimmage, whereas Deshaun is just pushing the ball downfield. Like, yards per catch is probably about 3 yards difference between these two.
Right.
But he's going against a good Ravens defense that is somewhat depleted because of the COVID. And the Ravens have RG3 as their quarterback. Hey, look, I'm pulling for RG3. RG3 has had such an interesting career arc. He's gone from incredible rookie of the year caliber dude to guy that couldn't get out of his own way and had bad luck with injuries to now guy that's actually cool being a backup to a younger version of himself in a lot of respects. So I kind of like the RG3 story. It'd be nice if he pulled one off here today.
Think about that. Think about that rookie class in 2012. There were three quarterbacks taken in the top 10. RG3 was the rookie of the year. The number 2 pick. Andrew Luck was the number 1 overall pick. He was thought to be the next big thing, like the greatest prospect since Peyton Manning. And Ryan Tannehill has wound up in 2020 being the guy who is talked about. Like, Andrew Luck's retired, RG3's a backup, and Ryan Tannehill is tearing the hell out of the league right now.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't it wild?
I couldn't even remember who you were talking about when you said three in the top 10.
Tannehill was 8th overall pick to the Dolphins that year. Yeah.
Boy, talk about the importance of getting the right GM and the right head coach combination.
Yes.
Because Tannehill, who would have thought, Tannehill spent years kind of playing the same like different versions of the same offense of just NFL style spread, peppering the field with short passes and everything. And it turns out what he really needed was an old school classic NFL offense.
Yeah.
And that's what he thrives in. And he just didn't have it. Plus he had injury issues and all of that. But yeah, if there's a cautionary tale to getting this right with this head coach hire right now, it's really important that we do right by Deshaun Watson.
No doubt. So we know this game today is clearly obviously being played on a Wednesday because of COVID. The 49ers, which is what we began talking about, Albert Breer has talked about local bubbles for the postseason where they just bubble up the teams in the city where the game is going to be played. And not regional bubbles like MLB did with the AL going to California, the NL coming here to Texas to play, local bubbles. And Seth, so we're kind of getting, in a weird way, we're kind of getting a beta test for this with the 49ers, are we not? The 49ers, for those of you who don't know this story, the 49ers, because of the restrictions in Santa Clara County, California, where they have said there will be no more contact sports being played, up to and including our professional sports teams, the 49ers are basically having to pick up their entire operation and they're moving it to Phoenix. They're going to play weeks 13 and 14 in Glendale.
And they did it at the drop of a hat. I think for all of our, you know, for all of our hand-wringing over, well, is it even feasible or possible to have a bubble? I think there are a couple of things we've learned, too, since the NBA bubble. Now, the NBA bubble was a resounding success.
Yes.
It was incredible. The biggest thing that did them in, potentially, was just old-school thirst for human companionship by one of your own Daniel Houses. But I think the fact that the numbers involved are pretty much being taken care of by the 49ers right now with their own resources and just in the regular season when the TV money isn't as great, it would lead me to believe that this would be pretty easy to pull off with all the NFL playoff teams. And the other thing I think we've learned is that I don't think it needs to be as restrictive as the NBA bubble was. Yeah, I think with the NBA bubble, we looked at it and thought, well, where are you going to do this with an NFL team where everybody's on the same campus and whatnot? I think you could probably be pretty damn successful, maybe not 100% successful, but pretty damn successful just doing a modified bubble where guys are wearing maybe the guys have to wear their connections 24 hours a day or something like that. And you just kind of, you hodgepodge it together. But at the very least, in the NFL, you can get by with several players having COVID. The NBA, you can't. If three starters have COVID, you're screwed. So I think we're going to end up having some kind of a bubble akin to what the 49ers are doing right now in Arizona.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting to watch the 49ers do this. I think it's interesting that it's a division rival that's kind of helping them out here. It's a division rival who all of a sudden finds themselves only one game ahead of the 49ers in the standings right now. Like, people have kind of forgotten about the 49ers because the other three teams in that division have all been well above 500 for most of the season. The 49ers beating the Rams last week, they're all of a sudden 5-6, you know? Yeah. And Kyle Shanahan and Robert Saleh, those are coaches that have clearly shown they are good enough to do things with backups to where they could be a problem for some people down the stretch.
I'm glad that you mentioned the cooperation between the two teams because as various people in the media understandably kind of crucify the NFL for every time there's some apparent unfairness, you know, like are the Steelers getting screwed over? Did the Broncos get screwed over? All of that. We hear a lot from players. We hear a lot from media talking about all of this. The teams themselves, when it comes to ownership, kind of made a pinky swear going into this season that, look, you're going to get screwed at some point. There's a really good chance you're going to get screwed at some point. That's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
So I don't think most of the actual decision makers in the NFL are all that distraught over the seeming unfairness of some of these things. That's just the way it was going to be. If you're going to get these games played, at some point you're probably going to get screwed and you just got to deal with it. So now the Steelers, it does seem, have had an inordinate amount of fun. But really, I mean, if you look at it, it's not like the NFL planned for the Titans to be the ones with the outbreak. It's not like they planned for the Ravens to be the one with the outbreak. It was just really bad luck that the Steelers had these guys coming up on their schedule. And by the way, the Steelers don't seem to be suffering all that much.
10-0!
They're the only undefeated team in the league.
Right. They were 4-6, and it had this ripple effect where it torpedoed their season. I would feel a little more sympathetic. They're 10-0 right now. Whatever they're doing, they're adapting to it.
And we're probably careening towards not having a bye week anyway.
Yeah.
So even if, like, let's say they had lost a couple of games but were still the number two seed, there's a good chance we're not going to have a bye week. There's a good chance that we add an extra playoff
team. Yeah, an eighth playoff team to each conference. There would be no bye weeks for anybody. I think the biggest thing, Seth, and we're going to get to headlines here in just a second, as we're talking about this and we're talking about the Niners going into a mini bubble, the playoffs being in local bubbles, the effectiveness of the NBA, I think if you had given the NFL one wish before this season, COVID-related, I think they would have said, our wish is that it can't, that the virus is not able to, not able is not the right way to put this. Let me back up. I think the NFL would have wished that there's strong evidence that the virus does not get spread in between the lines on the field of play. Obviously it can. It can get spread anywhere.
Right.
But to my knowledge, none of these outbreaks have been tied to the game itself.
Like cross-contamination.
You know, right, of team. Like, yeah. None of these teams that have had out, like the Tennessee Titans played the Vikings the week before their outbreak. The Vikings had no issues with the COVID. I don't know who the Ravens played a couple of weeks ago. There have been no issues with the teams having these outbreaks. There have been no issues with their previous opponents having outbreaks of their own, and I think that is absolutely huge. That would have been the one thing I think the league would have wished for before the season, and they are getting their up. I don't want to jinx it, but they're getting their wish right now.
Well, because you know what happens then, too, is that's when municipalities have to get involved.
That's right.
You know, if you're the mayor of Buffalo and all of a sudden it looks like you're bringing more coronavirus in by having them play whomever, then I suppose that then it gets a lot more complicated. And I do think it's what we've learned about this whole concept of viral load. Like, how much of the virus you're exposed to matters. So, and you're playing outdoors, the actual amount of time that you spend around other guys on the field is relatively small in football. It's not as big as you'd think it is between people from opposing teams. And it's outdoors. Like, even if you're playing indoors, it's basically outdoors because of the volume of air and the ventilation and all of that. So That's why, like, I don't get too persnickety at all. When the NFL fines somebody for not wearing a mask indoors, yeah, it's because they've got the data that this virus is being transmitted amongst team members, you know, when they're spending too much time close to each other. So you gotta be, that's where you have to be at your most finicky, is in these little social contexts. Well, and then the 49ers, Kyle Shanahan said one of their issues where they had several players in the protocol stemmed not from something that happened at the facility, but from a 30-minute dinner that eight guys went to, you know, after a game, and they were all in close quarters inside, and then bam, that's when you have your issues.
Do you think, speaking of outdoors, do you think that Sunday, the Texans and Colts, noon kick, 61 degrees and sunny on Sunday, do you think the roof is open on Sunday? They opened the roof for the last game.
Boy, it was open when it was 80-some degrees, and the one thing that everybody was reminded of very quickly was, oh, boy, this creates a horrible television product when the roof
is
open.
It does, the glare.
We are one of those, like, just like the old Dallas Stadium.
Yeah.
Man, from shade to shadow, it's impossible for the TV cameras to make the adjustment.
Yep.
And I understandably saw people saying that CBS needed to adjust their apertures or something. It's way harder to do than you would think. You'd think that these days, like, you could do it. I asked people about this. It's actually apparently really, really hard to account for. And one of the reasons, and I guess maybe the Texans just wouldn't want to say this because they don't want to upset the TV partners or what have you, but one of the reasons the roof is closed a lot for the day games, regardless of weather conditions, is that the TV product really suffers from it. So I don't know. I kind of, just for the sake of rewatching this thing, when I have to rewatch it on film and everything, I kind of want the roof closed.
Yeah, I'm not going to be
there. That wants it open.
Yeah, no, I'm not in the stadium, so I hope it's closed. I'm watching it on TV like a lot of us are, even though I'm doing pregame and postgame. That's how we're doing things these days. But 61 and sunny sounds delightful for a game.
I know, but Sean, I've never felt like when I'm at the stadium and the roof is open, you know, and obviously now I'm relying on distant memories of when it's happened. Have you ever felt like, oh, wow, it's just like being outside?
No, that's a good point.
Then I can see a jet fly overhead.
Right.
But that's about it. I feel like I've got my hour of quote-unquote sunlight if I'm in a Supermax prison.
No.
Where, like, they put you in some walled concrete room, but there's some open sky at the top.
Yeah, for us to go, this is really nice outdoor football at NRG Stadium would be the equivalent of opening up the sunroof on your car and calling it a convertible. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's
it's not like Minute Maid. Right. Like when they open the roof at Minute Maid, you're like, oh yeah, all right, this
wide
is
open
nice.
Spaces. Yeah, no question about it. All right, let's do some headlines. John McClain, top of the hour.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, Will Fuller, Bradley Roby suspended. We know that. The latest update on Will Fuller, at least from a timeline standpoint, came from Mike Florio yesterday. Pro Football Talk, a Texan spokesperson, telling Pro Football Talk that the team learned about Will Fuller's suspension on Monday. So about the time the rest of us were learning, they learned from Will Fuller's agent that he would be suspended by the league. If that is true, it means that the Texans did not know that when negotiating with the Packers regarding a possible trade of Will Fuller at the deadline 4 weeks ago. It also meant that the Texans didn't know about it before recently cutting Kenny Stills. That might be the bigger issue because the Texans now, I think to the benefit of evaluation, are operating with a wide receiving core that's going to have a lot of new young faces in it. But in terms of the effort of winning football games, it would be nice to have Kenny Stills on this team right now, Seth.
It would be nice, but man, Sean, ever since we brought it up and thought about this aspect of it, I can't stop thinking about how lucky Will Fuller is that he did not get traded, because he would have gotten traded to a contender, and that city would right now just absolutely despise Will Fuller.
Yes.
He would be so hated either in Green Bay or wherever else he might have gone. That would have been a team that gave up a second-round pick to try to win a Super Bowl this year, and then this guy, then you lose that pick to a guy who's a free agent at the end of the year, and you are missing in that extra piece to help you win a Super Bowl.
I'll take it a step further. My guess is there would be a lot of acrimony among Green Bay folks towards the Texans as well. Like towards the even though the Texans would be like, we didn't know anything. What are you talking about? They'd be like, how do you not know anything? This guy's in your building every day. And Seth, the city of Houston no longer gets the benefit of the doubt on stuff like this, thanks to the Astros and their garbage
banging. It would totally turn into, what are you going to trust the Astros? And honestly, it would have been bad for Jack Easterby. People without any evidence at all would have said, like, well, you know what? This is probably up to Jack Easterby's doing. He knew and they didn't know. So it just, it all actually, as much as it sucks, just because I like Will Fuller.
I
was really pulling for him, like, on a personal level. I want him to do well this year. It could have been a whole lot worse.
Yeah,
we kind of dodged a bullet in a lot of respects.
Yeah. Well, and on top of that, forget about just the Green Bay part. Like, I want Will Fuller on this team next year. Like, I know that there's a lot of reasons to be angry with Will Fuller right now. Carelessness probably the chief among them, but I want him on this team. You know, at the right price, but I want him on this team because of how this offense functions, and it's not easy to find guys like that already have a chemistry with your quarterback. I don't want Deshaun breaking in three more receivers next year like he's had to do this year, you know?
You know what's interesting about this, too? I would say I wish I could go back and do a Twitter poll at the time that Cushing got his first suspension, because I feel like there was a whole lot more emotion involved with that one, and I think part of it was Cushing's defense of himself.
Yes.
You know, Fuller, we've learned with PEDs, man, if you just own up to it and apologize, people move on pretty quickly. I think Cushing's adamant denial and his story kind of rankled a lot of people and left a bad taste in their mouth, where I don't think Fuller will get this.
No, I don't think. Well, there were a few things going on with Cushing. One, it happened before the season started. Now, 2010 wound up being a disastrous season for the team, but it came down before the season started. Brian Cushing was dynamite in 2009. He was the rookie of the year, defensive rookie of the year in the league. The only year he ever made a Pro Bowl as a player was his rookie year in 2009. So that's number one. He was already a guy you were counting on a defense that didn't have much, as we learned in 2010. That's number one. Number two, expectations were high in 2010. They had just finished 9-7. They'd won the last four games of the year to finish 9-7 the previous year. So expectations were very, very high. It was year five of the Kubiak era. And yeah, Seth, the biggest one was Cushing. The thing that Cushing tested positive for was something that, unless you put it in your body willingly,
HCG,
was found only in pregnant women and cancer patients. And Brian Cushing stepped up to a microphone and said that when he found out that he had tested positive for it, he was concerned that he thought he had cancer. And that's when people were like, okay, dude, all right, uh-huh, yeah. So, yeah, there were a lot of bunched up feelings over that. Now, obviously, those feelings got pushed aside. You know, Bill O'Brien Bill O'Brien kept Ryan Cushing around for a long, long time as the, quote, heart and soul of the team, and Cushing rewarded him with a 10-game suspension in 2017. So
I'm I'm looking at an old article from 2010 written by Greg Rosenthal on Pro Football Talk.
Oh, what's it say?
Greg Rosenthal, who I would call a professional friend. It's not like we're buddies or anything, but we, you know, we DM each other from time to time. He's one of the main guys over at NFL.com. I forgot that he used to be one of Florio's little lackeys back in the day.
He's come a long way. Yeah. What is he saying in this article about Cushing?
This is about that overtrained athlete syndrome.
Yeah. He overtrained.
That's right. He says a condition from which Andre Smith will never suffer.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Andre
Smith. That's why Greg couldn't just be a blog post writer for Pro Football Talk forever.
Yeah. You had to let that sense of humor break out somewhere. That was good.
I think part of it with Cushing, too, was that he roped Bob McNair in on it. You know, like McNair full board believed in him and in his story and all of that.
Yeah. And rewarded him with an extension 2 years later.
I will say, in defense of Cushing, I did know a guy with the Jaguars. Why am I blanking on? Oh, Kyle Brady.
Yeah.
A tight end who, he was a physical freak. And he did have a natural imbalance in his testosterone levels, just thing called testosterone to epitestosterone. Usually your body produces them at the same level. But he, like, his ratio was, like, naturally what would cause a positive steroid test.
Oh, wow.
So he got tested all the time. But I think early in his career there was a scare where, like, he had tested positive and he had to go and prove his case that, like, no, this is actually what it is. So, and so who knows? I don't know. As cockamamie as it seemed with Cushing, there are instances where guys just are kind of naturally askew, and sometimes the argument works and sometimes it doesn't.
That's interesting. Next headline, Wednesday night football. It's Wednesday afternoon football, 2:40 p.m. Circle the 2:40 p.m. time on your calendar today, people. You're going to get one of the greatest rivalries in all of sport, the Baltimore Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Granted, it's going to be on a Wednesday afternoon. Granted, it's going to be with RG3 at quarterback, not the reigning MVP, Lamar Jackson. And granted, this is a game that is now on its fourth different date in the last 6 days. This was supposed to be played on Thanksgiving night, pushed to Sunday, pushed to Tuesday, pushed to today. The Ravens, Seth, still, even as they were getting on the plane yesterday, found out that another player and a staff member, not unexpected from what I'm hearing, but tested positive for COVID. So it's almost like they're getting on the plane, and if COVID were a thing that you could see, it's like it's dripping off the back of their shoes as it's getting on the plane. Like, there's still some COVID, like, still, like, rubbed into the back of their pants as they're getting on the plane.
They're not a murder suspect, but they are a person of interest.
Right. How did that blood wind up on your shoes? So
I know. You're almost like the pilot. How'd you like to be a pilot of the Ravens team plane? I got to think. I mean, now they're, like, hermetically sealed in that terrorist safe cabin up there, but still.
Still, it's a big tube of COVID going on, like, flying through the sky right now.
I'd come onto it. I'd be using the oxygen the whole time. I'd just have that little cannula in my nose and sucking in the sweet, sweet canned oxygen.
How do you plan on watching Wednesday afternoon football? Are you going to go out? Are you going to be on your couch? What are you going to do?
I'm going to watch. Brandy and I are going to sit on the couch and watch this. And Sean, this is really testing my newfound sobriety bad. There's something about the weather turning cold and a game on in the afternoon when I could just snuggle in with my wife and watch some football. Oh, man, I'm jonesing for some kind of alcohol. I might be guzzling mouthwash by halftime.
Feeling like a Cabernet Sauvignon kind of day, baby. Yeah.
I know. I was thinking a hot toddy. Ooh, I was thinking of like some kind of like Irish coffee or something. Some hot drink. Like a cider-based alcoholic drink. I got to find something to substitute for alcohol for when I get those feelings.
Cider's good.
I don't know. I suggested sex. But I don't think like, the problem is I crave alcohol a lot, so I don't think, you know, it's 20 years of marriage. I can't demand it, you know, twice a day, every day.
You can. She just doesn't have to say yes.
I demand relations.
No, damn.
Brandy, come hither. I demand relationships, and you as my wife shall provide them.
My drink of choice shall be brandy. She's bringing a bottle of... No, not that brandy. That brandy.
You shall either bring me a scotch on the rocks or yourself.
Brandy. all right, last headline before we get to John McClain. The college football playoff rankings are out. They are unchanged. The Alabama Crimson Tide and Notre Dame number 1 and 2, and then Clemson and Ohio State round out the top four. Some weird things going on, though, Seth. The ACC, Clemson was all bent out of shape that Florida State canceled their game a couple weeks ago the morning of the game. Like, Clemson flew to Tallahassee, and Florida State canceled the game the morning of the game because they were nervous about playing Clemson, who had a player test positive overnight on Friday. They did the same thing, Florida State, to Virginia again this week. So they've had two opponents travel to Tallahassee, only to have them cancel the game the morning of the game. And just coincidentally, Florida State stinks at football now and is worse than both those teams. Dabo Swinney said, "We ain't going back to Tallahassee and playing these guys." They wanted Clemson to go back December 12th, the week before the ACC title game, and play them. And Dabo's like, "No, we ain't playing them." So the ACC announced yesterday, "Okay, Clemson, you don't have to play them. Oh, and oh, by the way, Notre Dame, you don't have to play Wake Forest on December 12th. So now both of those teams who are leading the ACC were handed a bye week. This is like wrestling. Like, this is like Vince McMahon creating a storyline. And so now Notre Dame clinched a spot in the ACC title game yesterday by doing nothing. They are they play Syracuse this week, and that's it. They could lose. Now they're a 33-point favorite. But they could lose to Syracuse, and they're still going to play in the ACC title game. Notre Dame, as if it's not weird enough that they're playing in an ACC title game, an independent. But the ACC just basically said, okay, you guys don't have to play on the 12th. Here you go.
Good job, Sean. Big win for Catholicism.
Huge.
More evidence that I would use that. I would use that in your sales pitch. Look, God's favoring us, obviously.
I'm not out here pitching Catholicism to anybody. What are you talking about?
I don't know. You went to Notre Dame, right?
I did.
Don't you have to convert at the door or something?
Oh,
don't you have to?
I'm not a Jehovah's Witness.
Were you raised Catholic?
Yeah, moderate. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
I didn't go to Catholic school or anything like that. You know, kind of a holiday Catholic more than anything else, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, we got John McClain. John McClain's a Baptist because he went to Baylor, right? You got to convert when you hit the door?
I just always
assumed that all these religious schools, you got to convert to whatever religion they are at the door.
Yeah.
It's the best way to bolster the ranks.
Well, apparently you think that I go door-to-door pitching it to people as well. Like that. Jehovah's Witnesses.
No, that's not your guys. You guys like to go into like third world countries and force it on them. That's more your deal. I'm not, that's not the door to door selling to actual
them.
Americans. I mean, not forcing it on them, but you know, like, hey, we won't subjugate you quite so much if you just come on over to our side.
These third world countries.
Yeah, we'll throw a holiday your way. Well, that pagan ritual of yours, we'll call it Easter.
Right, let's go.
Yeah.
Who is that at the door of our hut, honey? Oh, it's the Catholics again.
it's that friendly Catholic missionary.
Right. All right.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.